With the election in Mexico of left-of-center president Andrés Manuel López Obrador in January, the question arises, has the country changed for the better, particularly for the less well-off and the working class? Furthermore, how is the new Mexican government dealing with the critical migrant situation, with refugees, mostly family groups, streaming north towards the US border, where they're guaranteed a hostile reception? To get some clarity on the current social and political situation in Mexico, KCSB reached out to Laura Carlson, American activist and political commentator based in Mexico City, where she's the director of the Americas program in the Center for International Policy. She also writes a monthly column for the online magazine Desinformémonos. So what has changed for the better since López Obrador took over the Mexican presidency in January, replacing the corrupt administration of Enrique Peña Nieto? Laura Carlson points to a number of positive measures already in place.
One of the most important changes that we're seeing is less repression, because under the prior government, demonstrations and people in defensive land, there was a high level of repression against movements. However, this change is going to take some time. Another area where it's been rather immediate has been the increase in the minimum wage. And this means a lot to a lot of people, especially there in the border area. The minimum wage was doubled in order to bring it more closely in line with wages in the United States. A number of other reforms in labor that should be in place shortly. What we've also seen is a real change in the way that government behaves. There have been a number of measures, and this is one of the hallmarks of the campaign of Andrés Manuel López Obrador, the new president. There's been a number of measures to reduce waste in government, and the idea is that this money will be plowed back into social programs. We already have one social program that's having an impact, and that is a series of grants, for first jobs and for education. For young people who before had no employment or education opportunities available to them, making them kind of easy prey for recruitment, organized crime. And so there's some real changes there.
Another point is to make the government more efficient. For example, pensioners are now receiving their pension payments on time. But will López Obrador's administration be able to curb or disable the drug production and distribution industry that has not only led to the violent deaths of 250,000 people over the past 20 years, but has corrupted local police forces and probably penetrated the highest levels of government? Laura Carlson warns that this is a new administration and measures taken now will take time, but she points to some positive signs, including an attempt to persuade peasant farmers to cultivate legitimate crops and offer grants to young people seeking jobs in the legitimate economy.
The idea was to go to the root causes and say that whether it's peasant farmers in the countryside who are producing these prohibited drugs for the market in the United States, or whether it's youth who are consuming them, that if you give them options, viable options, they will move out of the criminal activity and into other types of activity. So they've been working on these root causes, but of course these are measures that take time. Part of the scholarships and the support for young people that I mentioned has to do with that, giving them other options besides going into organized crime. The major obstacle in really changing what has been a militarized war on drugs in many ways has been the United States. The Pentagon has been very happy with the cooperation between the Mexican government and the Mexican armed forces and the U.S. Pentagon, because before there was a lot of reticence against being involved within Mexico, and now they are finding that there's a lot of cooperation. Of course, the public is not at all happy about this model of a militarized war on drugs. It's led to over 250,000 deaths, and as there's more military equipment sold, there's more security companies from the United States coming in. It's big business, but it's a terrible, terrible price for society. We're waiting to see to what degree the government will actually change this. because although there were promises to change the model, and it's urgent that the model be changed, we now find that they have announced a National Guard that was going to be more civil and not as reliant on the armed forces and this whole war model. But unfortunately, after that law passed, the president appointed a military general to be the head of that National Guard. So there's very, very serious warning signs that the model of the war on drugs won't be changed to the degree that many people, especially human rights leaders, had hoped.
Carlson went on to emphasize how much successive U.S. administrations have promoted military suppression of drug use and production. Because of pressure from the Pentagon, weapons manufacturers, and so-called security and surveillance companies. Her call is for this bloody model to end. She went on to denounce America's war on drugs, both foreign and domestic.
I mean, in reality, the whole war on drugs is a farce because they know that it's not working. It hasn't reduced the flow of prohibited drugs. They know that regulation would work much better to bring, you know, to destroy this entire underground economy. And yet they continue it because it's worked both in the United States, and we now know this, and there's a fairly general consensus which explains why state by state by state are now, you know, legalizing, regulating the sale of marijuana. It's functioned primarily as a mechanism of social control. And that's what's happening here in Mexico, too, with the deployment of the armed forces, where there are local movements, you have the capacity to immediately put them down with the pretext of the war on drugs. And what's now becoming very clear is that that war on drugs has clearly morphed into a war on immigrants and refugees. And this is where we're seeing the most violent repression now.
On the continuing problem of migration, with caravans of refugees fleeing terrible conditions in their home countries, the new administration of Mexico finds itself in a critical dilemma between the humanitarian crisis of mostly families seeking refuge and the hard-line rhetoric of the Trump administration refusing admission. López Obrador is not indifferent to the cries for help and at the same time does not want to provoke an aggressive administration in Washington. So far, the response has been mixed. Government policy on this key issue is, quite frankly, a work in progress.
He's between a rock and a hard place in the sense that we're seeing an increase in immigration and, again, refugee flows, because many of these people, since they are fleeing persecution and situations of extreme violence, could qualify as refugees under international protections. Because of the collapse of Central American countries, particularly Honduras, where there's been a political crisis since the United States helped impose, after a fraudulent election, the President Juan Orlando Hernandez, and the economic model, the neoliberal economic model, has continued to destroy job opportunities and livelihoods there. But then also in Guatemala, where we're seeing corruption taking its toll, and extreme poverty, and the displacement of especially indigenous peoples, where natural resources are coming under pressure, and in El Salvador, where the return of gangs, you know, has created extreme situations of violence and extortion. So we have these historical problems that were not only not resolved before, but have been exacerbated by U.S. policies in particular that's causing this increase in immigration. We have a government that's now committed to respecting the human rights of the migrants, but it's being constantly harassed by the Trump administration, which says that it's not doing enough to stop them. Of course, it's not Mexico's job to stop migration to the United States, and much less to stop refugee flows, which under international law have a right to request asylum there.
Another issue, what about the new NAFTA, recently negotiated between the US, Canada, and Mexico? How different is this trade agreement from the old agreement? Is it an improvement, particularly in areas of workers' rights, setting drug prices, and environmental protections? Are international companies still setting the agenda for their own advantage? Laura Carlson sees a mixed bag, with a few more protections for workers' rights, but what sounds like a sweetheart deal for international pharmaceutical companies.
Well, the biggest difference that's a step forward is that the labor agreement that used to be a side agreement was integrated into the NAFTA agreement, the new NAFTA agreement. And this includes the rights that are defined by the International Labor Organization, that all the three countries have to respect those rights. And it also includes a special annex on labor rights in Mexico in order for corporations not to undercut labor rights by moving to Mexico, where the laws are not necessarily looser, but the enforcement is certainly looser. Mexico is trying to do its part by tightening up its laws and improving salaries at the same time. And this has been one of the aspects that organized labor, of course, and in general, human rights experts and others have heralded in the new NAFTA. There's a couple things that are worse, actually, than they were in the old one. And one is the privileges granted pharmaceutical companies for patenting vital medicines for longer periods of time, including new categories. There's also some other aspects that have been criticized. Overall, I think, as you mentioned or as you asked, you can't say it's very different.
Finally, on the international diplomatic front, can Mexico present itself as a peacemaker and an honest broker in the smouldering crisis between Venezuela, the United States, and a host of countries gathering around the American flag? Here, Laura Carlson points to a very positive role that Mexico can play. Mexico has historically always maintained its neutrality in major international disputes and insisted on the rights of all countries to work out their own solutions. It has resisted the Trump administration's attempts to demand the ouster of the Maduro government in Venezuela and has offered its good offices to serve as an honest broker. Let's hope it's not too late.
This is one of the areas in which we've really seen the difference between the former conservative governments and a new progressive government. Mexico immediately announced that it would no longer be a proxy for the United States because, especially in the Organization of American States, essentially the former governments were acting in U.S. and to back up U.S. interests there without a foreign policy of their own based on Mexico's interests, but rather to placate U.S. interests. And this made it a much more aggressive foreign policy than we'd seen in the past. The traditional foreign policy for Mexico is a foreign policy of neutrality and non-intervention and self-determination in foreign policy issues that have to do with the internal affairs of other countries, which is very reasonable. It's a policy that served well to keep Mexico out of conflicts and to reduce, you know, any spillover of other types of conflicts in other parts of the country. And that's what they've gone back to. So as far as Venezuela, even when we had a number of countries in the region that were recognizing Juan Guaido, this, you know, this man who stood up in the street and said, I'm president now, basically.
Yes.
And were supporting the regime change plan of the U.S. government, Mexico did not. And Mexico has even been more active by putting itself up as a mediator and supported Venezuela's right to determine its own future.
Time will tell whether López Obrador can establish himself as the progressive leader he's always claimed to be. He's made a good start, but he must at least curb the activities of the drug cartels, purge the federal and local police forces of all who take bribes from criminal gangs, and make small farmers and young people see there is a life to be made beyond criminal activity. Laura Carlson is an excellent source to follow Mexican developments. Her website is www.americas.org. This is Harry Law